Today we continue with this series from the book of Ruth, and the series is titled, There's a Redeemer. And as I've shared with you the last couple of weeks, the idea behind this is that we'll look at the book of Ruth and see how God provided a Redeemer there, and then as we get closer and closer to Easter, we'll turn into the New Testament and we'll see those examples of how Jesus became our Redeemer. He became a redeemer for those who would choose to believe in His name. As we've looked at the book of Ruth these last couple Sundays, we've learned a few things about it. The first thing that we learn is that we're not exactly sure who wrote it. Some attribute it to Samuel. Others say that it was written during the reign of King David. Here's what we do know. What we do know is we know that the events of the book of Ruth happened during the period of Judges. And last summer, we looked at the book of Judges, and we were reminded of how just terrible things were during that period and how God needed to step in time and time again to bring redemption and healing to His people, to the land of Israel. The book of Ruth is a story of one example of redemption that would happen among a mother-in-law and her daughter-in-law. Last Sunday we were introduced to the person of Boaz, the one who would come as that redeemer. So we've now kind of been introduced to the three main characters here in the book. The Life Application Study Bible says that the purpose of this book is to show how three people, Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz, remained strong in character and true to God even when society around them was collapsing. And that's the part we can relate to. We can relate to this picture of society around us collapsing, because I think we'd really agree that we see that in our world today, that society's really falling apart. So how can we take these three people here in the book of Ruth, how can we use their example to remain strong in character and true to God, even when the world around us is falling apart? We saw that in chapter 1 of the book of Ruth. We saw that there was a need for a redeemer because that family was in crisis. Naomi's husband died. Her sons died, but not before they married Moabite women. And then Naomi felt a responsibility to try to care for these daughters-in-law, and she told them actually to go back to their homes, to go back to their gods. But Ruth refused. She said, nothing will separate us short of death. And so these two, Ruth and Naomi, they need a redeemer. They need somebody to step in. And that's what we saw last week. Last week we saw someone who's going to step in and provide, and that's Boaz. And as we looked at Boaz last week, we saw him provide grace upon grace, as he cared for and as he provided for Ruth and then also for Naomi. Today, there's a redeemer. Be still and know. As we look through chapter 3, I want you to kind of be surprised with me at the number of times that Ruth is just told to wait. She's told to lie down. She's told to sit still. She's told to just be patient. How many of us like to hear those words, be patient? How many of us like to be told that we're just going to have to wait? But time and again, that's what Ruth is told. And what she has to do is she has to wait for God's plan. She has to wait for God's fulfillment. She has to wait for God to bring her this Redeemer. Maybe. She's told she's just going to have to wait. Warren Wiersbe put it this way. He said, have you put yourself at the feet of the Lord of the harvest? That's what Ruth is going to do. She's going to go to Boaz, the Lord, small L, the Lord of the harvest, small h. She's going to put herself at His feet, and she's going to trust Him to do His work. But as we think about how the book of Ruth applies to our lives, we need to be willing to put ourselves at God's feet and wait on Him to work and to move. We struggle with that because we don't like the idea of being patient. We don't like the idea of waiting. But that's what we're going to see in the person of Ruth this morning, that she was willing to put herself in the hands of another and wait. Wait for that Redeemer to come. Look with me, if you will, at verse 1 in chapter 3. In verse 1, then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? Now Boaz, whose young women were you were with, is he not our relative? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the thrashing floor. Therefore, wash yourself, anoint yourself, put on your best garment, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking." If you remember last Sunday when we got to the end of chapter 2, at the end of chapter 2, Ruth had gone to the fields of Boaz and she gleaned there. And she gleaned there from the period of the barley harvest through the wheat harvest. And commentators say that was about a 6-week period. After that 6-week period, there's really nothing more for Ruth to do. The gleaning is done. And as we get to chapter 3, what we see here is we see that Naomi reminds her that, hey, you remember that guy Boaz? Well, he's one of our relatives. He's kin. And then Naomi brings up something that she hadn't talked about for a while. She talked about it back in chapter 1. If you go back there with me to chapter 1, verse 9. When Naomi's sons had died, she felt a responsibility for these two daughter-in-laws. And in chapter 1, verse 9, she said, "The Lord grant that you may find rest, each in the house of her husband." She kissed them, and they lifted up their voices, and they wept. In verse 9, she was talking about the fact that she couldn't give them what she needed, what they needed. She had no more sons. She couldn't give them a husband. And she said, what you need to do is you need to go back home. That's where you'll find rest. That's where you'll find security. In verse 1 in chapter 3, though, she now says to Ruth, "Shall I not seek security for you?" Remember, there's been a lot going on here with Naomi. She went from being forced out of her homeland into a strange land in hopes that her family could survive because there was a famine in Israel. She loses her husband and her sons, and when she comes back home, she says, "I'm empty." And now things have started to turn around a little bit. And here in verse 1 of chapter 3, she feels like that she can now provide something for her daughter-in-law. And she says, "Shouldn't I try to find you security?" And then as you look at verses 2 and 3, she begins to expound upon the fact that Boaz is their relative. And she begins to lay out a plan. The Life Application Study Bible says Naomi was telling Ruth to act in accordance with Israelite custom and law. As we read about this plan, it might seem a little seedy. It might seem like it's the plot of a soap opera. But what it really truly is it's God's plan to provide redemption for families who are in need. And so as you look there at verses 2 and 3, Naomi begins by saying that Boaz, this very night, he is at the thrashing floor, thrashing out grain. Now, just to give a little bit of perspective about that, the thrashing floor in these towns and communities in biblical times were typically on a hill right outside of the town. And they were shared by the different members of the community. And so everybody took their turn, much like in olden days, whenever my great-grandfather had a thrashing machine, and he would drag that thrashing machine around to different places and thrash out grain for folks. But here, there was a common thrashing floor in the community, and the farmers took their grain there, and they thrashed it out. Really what happened was animals walked over the tops of the stalks of grain and basically worked the grain out that way. Boy, my John Deere combine don't look too bad now, even though it throws stuff out the back. But that's the way it worked at this time. And then once they had the grain thrashed out, because it was at the top of a hill, oftentimes they would throw the grain up into the air so that the breeze that was blowing could blow out the chaff and clean it as best they could. What a job. What a job. And we've all been around a grain field, and we know that it's normally hot and it's dusty and it's just nasty and you get sweaty and you get grain dust all over you. That's where Boaz was. It was in a place that was public. And we need to remember that, because what's going to happen in this story here, it's not seedy, it's not something that's being hidden. It's something that's taking place in a public place where others could see what was happening if that happened. Naomi says to her daughter-in-law, she says, Boaz is there at the thrashing floor tonight. Here's what I want you to do. You need to wash yourself. You need to anoint yourself with perfume. You need to change. You need to put on your best clothes. And then you need to carefully go down. And Naomi gives specific instructions. She says, when you get there, you need to wait for Boaz to go to sleep, to lie down. Because oftentimes what these guys did was they lay down with their pile of grain to keep people from coming along and stealing it. And Naomi knew how this would work, and she said, he's going to lay down, and then I want you to go, and I want you to lie down at his feet. And then you need to wait. So here's that first example where Ruth is told that she needs to go. She needs to lie down. She needs to wait. And as you look there at verse 3, actually, it's a little bit later. I didn't read far enough. But it's in verse 5. And she said to her, all that you say to me, I will do. We see this perfect picture of Ruth being submissive. We see this perfect picture of Ruth saying to her mother-in-law, whatever you want me to do, I'll do just that. That's one of the things, that's one of the characteristics that we should notice about Ruth as we continue to work through this book. That she was willing to give of herself. She was willing to do what she was instructed to do. And my wonder is this, did she really understand what she was doing here? Remember, she was from Moab. She wasn't a follower of God. She became one. But did she really understand what all this was about? In verse 6, she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law instructed her. We look ahead now to verse 7. In verse 7, chapter 3 is just a wonderful example of how a story builds upon itself. Verse 7, and after Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was cheerful, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain, and she came softly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. Now it happened at midnight that the man was startled and turned himself, and there a woman was lying at his feet, and he said, who are you? So she answered, I'm Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you're a close relative. Ruth did as she was commanded to do. She went and she laid down. And she's doing this at night. And the Nelson Study Bible points this out. Again, the world would look at this story and think that there's something seedy about it. Think that there's something wrong about what's going on here. But her going at night was a means of protecting Boaz from embarrassment if he decided not to exercise his duty as a close relative. He was a close relative. He was one who could redeem, but he could make the choice to say no. Naomi and Ruth, they didn't want Boaz to be embarrassed by the community if he said no to this request. Ruth goes and she waits for Boaz to lie down, and then she did exactly as she had been instructed. Again, she's submitting to what somebody had told her to do. She uncovered the feet of Boaz, and she laid there, and she waited. She submitted herself not only to her mother-in-law, what her mother-in-law had asked her to do, but now she's showing submission by laying at the feet of Boaz. Now again, I want you to think about where Boaz was. And that picture I painted a little while ago of being in the grain field and coming out of the grain field, you're hot, you're sweaty, you're dusty, you're dirty. And she lays herself down at Boaz's feet. Boaz, in the middle of the night, he rolls over. And when he rolls over, he realizes there's someone there at his feet. And he says, "Who are you? Who's there?" Like I said, many times people came to steal grain, and maybe that was the first thought that went through his head, that somebody's trying to steal his grain. He says, "Who are you?" And Ruth speaks up, and she makes a very forward request. She identifies herself as Ruth. She identifies herself as one of his maidservants. Again, she's showing herself to be submissive to him. And she says, would you take me under your wing? I'd like you to go back to chapter 2 to verse 12. Because this was where Ruth and Boaz had first met. This is where Ruth had begun the process of gleaning and working in Boaz's field. And as she and Boaz had conversation in chapter 2, verse 12, Boaz had said this. He said, "The Lord repay your work, and a full reward be given you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge." Boaz said to her, "You've come to Israel with your mother-in-law. You've come to be under the wing of the Lord. May He repay you for all that you've done." And now she's coming to him, and she's saying, "Won't you take me under your wing? Won't you be my redeemer? Because, well, you're a close relative." Warren Wiersbe says that she's asking him to obey the law of the kinsman redeemer and take her as his wife. Let's go back to the book of Deuteronomy. I think it's important that we see something that I mentioned a little while ago, and that was that Naomi was asking her daughter-in-law to do that the law prescribed. And you can find this in the book of Leviticus. It's also in the book of Deuteronomy. In Deuteronomy chapter 25, verse 5, here's the word of the Lord. Here's the command. "If brothers dwell together and one of them dies and has no son, the widow of the dead man shall not be married to a stranger outside the family. Her husband's brother shall go into her, take her as his wife, and perform the duty of a husband's brother to her." Now we know that Ruth's husband is dead along with her brother-in-law. We know that there are no other brothers in this family. But if you look there at Deuteronomy 25:5, it says there that the woman should not be married to a stranger outside of the family. And so Boaz is in the family line of Elimelech. He can be a redeemer here according to the law of God. And that's what Ruth and Naomi are asking him to do. But Ruth is told to go, to come softly, to lay down, to make this request, and then wait. It surprised me as I prepared for this message how many times that Ruth was asked to just put the brakes on. Just wait. And we see it again as we move on to verse 10. As we move on to verse 10, after having this conversation with Boaz in the middle of the night, she's told to lie down, to wait until morning. In verse 10, "Then Boaz said, 'Blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter, for you have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, in that you did not go after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you request, for all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman. Now, it is true that I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. Stay this night, and in the morning it shall be that if he will perform the duty of a close relative for you, good. Let him do it. But if he does not want to perform the duty for you, then I will perform the duty for you as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning.' So she lay down at his feet until morning, and she arose before one could recognize another. Then he said, "Do not let it be known that the woman came to the threshing floor." Also he said, "Bring the shawl that is on you and hold it." And when she held it, he measured 6 ephahs of barley and laid it on her. Then she went to the city. So just to get this picture in our mind again, Ruth goes to the threshing floor. She lays down at the feet of Boaz. In the middle of the night, he rolls over. He realizes someone's there. He says, "Who are you?" She says, "It's one of your maidservants. Will you take me under your wing? Will you be my redeemer?" And now here in verse 10, we begin to read Boaz's responses to her. And the truth is that if she went there with the hope of Boaz becoming her redeemer, some of what he said was probably not what she wanted to hear. And how often doesn't that happen to us? How often when we're being told to wait in our lives spiritually, how often do we hear things that we really don't want to hear? And how do we handle that? Do we handle that in submission? Ruth will. Because even though she's a new follower of God, she believes that God's going to provide, that God will give her and her mother-in-law the Redeemer that they need. As Boaz begins to respond here, it's kind of interesting how he starts. He says to her, "Blessed are you of the Lord. You've shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, and that you did not go after young men." So that tells us that Boaz is a little older. And he says, "You didn't go after poor or rich." To me, it's kind of like he's saying, "Well, Ruth, you didn't go after the best looking guy. You came after me. And thanks for doing that." And it speaks to the kind of person that you are. He says to her, he says, "I will do all that you request." And he again talks about the kind of reputation that she has. She has a reputation for being a virtuous woman. We saw that in chapter 2. In chapter 2, when he learned who she was, when he heard what she had done, he was impressed by that. And now after getting to know her of 6 weeks of the harvest, he says to her, "You're a virtuous woman." So far, so good. She's hearing great things. But then this is the part that she probably didn't want to hear. He says, "While it's true, I'm a close relative of your former husband. Yes, I can be your kinsman redeemer. Yes, I can follow the law as prescribed in Deuteronomy 25:5. There's somebody else. There's somebody else that's a closer relative than I am. And I don't know what he might want to do. Maybe he'll want to marry you and maybe he won't." And Boaz pretty much said that. He said that in verse 13. "If he will perform the duty of a close relative for you, good, let him do it." Again, if Ruth had her heart set on becoming Boaz's wife, that kind of burst her bubble there. I mean, she had been in his field. She had seen the kind of guy that he was. But he's telling her that there's somebody else that's closer than me. And then, "Ruth, you're going to have to be patient. You're going to have to sit still. You're going to have to know that God's in control." He tells her, "Okay, we've talked about this. Now you need to lie down again. And you're going to have to wait till morning whenever I can try to do something about this." Warren Wiersbe says, "The great concern of Boaz was the redemption of Ruth, even if another kinsman redeemer had to do it." J. Vernon McGee said, and I shared this last Sunday, that he believes when these two saw each other that for Boaz it was love at first sight. I don't know if that's true or not. But it seems to me like Boaz had interest in her because he knew that there was somebody else ahead of him to be her redeemer. And he's willing to give up his plans. He's willing to give up his desire to marry her so that he can make sure that she is taken care of and that she's secure. Again, we see this wonderful picture of Boaz being a person of grace. He wants to make sure that she's protected. Protected and cared for in the future, but protected this night. She had came to the thrashing floor in the middle of the night, and had he told her to go back home at this point, who knows who she might have ran into and encountered. He honored her. He respected her. Did you notice there in verse 14 that he said, and I think he made this statement to people who were around, he said, "Do not let it be known that the woman came to the threshing floor." You know what would have happened. Tongues would have started wagging. Did you know? I heard. And quickly it was spread that Ruth had gone there, and Boaz gave instructions. He wasn't the only person at the threshing floor that night. He said, "There's no need to go away from here and talk about what happened here today." And then there in verse 15, he blesses her. He tells her to get her shawl and he fills it up with barley. And here's where we get into this measurement issue again. Because last Sunday, we talked about how Ruth gleaned and she came up with an ephah of barley. And some people said that was a half bushel. Some people said it was a bushel. I'm going to tell you, I don't know how much it was. Because here we see that he gave her six ephahs of barley. He loaded it up in her shawl, and then he helped her gather it up and take it back home. Now, if she had gathered a bushel of barley, 48 pounds, 48 times six, that's almost 300 pounds that she'd have been carrying back home. I don't think it was that much. It doesn't really matter how much it was. What matters is it was another example of Boaz showing grace and providing for Ruth, even though she wasn't, quote unquote, his responsibility yet. Poor Ruth, she's lugging this grain back home. And maybe she's thinking, what did I do all that for? Because she's leaving the threshing floor with no more information than when she went there. Because she was told to just lie down and wait. Go home and wait. Again, how often do we like being told we've got to be patient, we've got to wait? In verse 16, in the early morning hours, we read that there in verses 14 and 15, that basically while it was still dark, it wasn't daylight yet, she goes back home to her mother-in-law. When she came to her mother-in-law, verse 16, she said, "Is that you, my daughter?" Then she told her all that the man had done for her. And she said, "These six ephahs of barley he gave me, for he said to me, 'Do not go empty-handed to your mother-in-law.'" Then she said, this is Naomi speaking now, "Sit still, my daughter, until you know how the matter will turn out, for the man will not rest until he has concluded the matter this day." Naomi's question in verse 16, "Is that you, my daughter?" Depending on your translation might be worded a little bit differently. And commentators, they've kind of stumbled over that question because it's almost like that Naomi didn't know who her daughter-in-law was. But I like J. Vernon McGee, he kind of puts it this way. He says that what the question meant was, "Are you Mrs. Boaz or not? What did you find out when you went to the thrashing floor? Are you engaged to be married? Have we found you security? Have we found you a redeemer?" And we read there in verse 16 and 17 that Ruth explained everything that happened. What Boaz had said. It doesn't go over it word for word, but I believe she told exactly what happened. And I wonder if there's disappointment. Because what happens when we hear something that we don't want to hear? or we don't get the answer we want. And yes, even spiritually. Don't we get disappointed? Don't we wonder why things didn't work out the way we wanted them to? I don't know. I feel like that there could have been disappointment here. Both on the part of Naomi and Ruth, because Naomi had laid out this plan as to how this was all going to work, and it didn't, at least not yet. And Ruth lost a husband, and she'd like to have a new one, and she'd like to have some security, but yet he told her she was going to have to wait. And in the course of telling all that happened, Ruth said to her mother-in-law, she said, "Look, look at what he sent our way. Look at all this grain that he brought to us. He said to me, 'Don't go empty-handed.'" Remember what Naomi had said about herself? She said, "Don't call me pleasant, call me empty. Because I left here full and I came back with nothing." And Boaz doesn't want Naomi to feel that way, so he sends more grain. And then we see the words of Naomi. "Sit still, my daughter." There's those words again. "Be patient. Just wait. Sit still, my daughter, until you know how the matter will turn out." As we get to this part in the book of Ruth, if we were writing this story, boy, we'd be writing in the happy love story ending right now. Because Ruth has put herself out there. She's been submissive to Naomi, to Boaz. And if we were writing the book of Ruth, we'd write in, "And they live happily ever after." But that's not what God wanted. What God wanted for Ruth is he wanted her to realize that she was going to have to wait for this character, Boaz, to perform his act of redemption. She was going to have to wait until he could go approach that other and see if that other wanted to step in, even to a place that Boaz obviously wanted to step into himself. Ruth's being asked to wait, but so is Boaz, because he doesn't know the outcome of what he's going to do. As we come to the end of chapter 3, and as we get to the end of, toward the end of the book here, the words that kept coming to my mind this week was, "Be still and know." Over and over again, Ruth, she was told, "Wait, rest. Ruth, this isn't up to you, it's up to somebody else." And so I wonder if there's a lesson in there for us today. You know, we live in a world today where, you know, we're supposed to take the bull by the horns. We're supposed to take matters into our own hands. We're supposed to do things our way. But that's never God's intention. God's intention isn't for us to wrestle the bull. God's intention for us is for him to wrestle the bull for us. God's intention is that we're supposed to wait on him. Warren Wiersbe, in his commentary, he writes about how difficult it is for him to wait. And I can relate to that. Over the last year, I've been helping my wife out doing an awful lot of grocery shopping, and I don't like it. And I especially don't like when the cart's full when it's time to go up to the checkout counter. And I don't look for the line that's the longest. I look for the one that's the shortest. Because I just want to get out of there. After being in there already, I just want to get out of there. And then it seems like there's always something that goes wrong. The person in front of your debit card doesn't work, or One day I was there and they put the debit card in and, well, here's your cash back. I didn't ask for cash back. And then that was another, and I turned the cart and went to another line. I don't do a good job of waiting. And the truth is that that's not just in my day-to-day activities, but that's in my spiritual walk as well. I don't do a good job of waiting on the Lord. But maybe we need to remember Ruth. And maybe we need to remember the psalmist. If you turn back to Psalm 46, you're familiar with Psalm 46, you know it well. Psalm 46 is the picture of God being the refuge of His people. It's the picture of His people coming in under their wing, like we see in Ruth. In Psalm 46, verse 1, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. And if you go on, and we're not going to read the whole psalm, but if you go on, we read there that God is our help, God is our strength, God is our protection in catastrophe, in war, in desolation. When things are going wrong, where do we need to go to? Do we need to wrestle the bull ourselves? No, we need to turn it over to God because He is our refuge and our strength. And that's what Naomi's telling Ruth. That's what Boaz is telling Ruth. They're both telling her, you just need to wait. God is our refuge. God is our strength. God is our protector. And then if you turn to verse 10 in Psalm 46, with the war, with the desolation, with the catastrophe that's been described in the verses of Psalm 46, the psalmist says, be still and know that I am God. Be still. And know that I'm God. Warren Wiersbe writes, and he says, have you put yourself at the feet of the Lord of the harvest? And are you trusting Him to work? I really want you to think about that question in the context of this message. Ruth went and put herself at the feet of the Lord of the harvest, Boaz, and she had to trust Him to do His work. She had to trust Him to go that day and find out what the other Redeemer might do. You and I have gone to the Lord of the harvest. You and I have gone to Him and have asked Him to give us His power of redemption in our life. But do we continue to trust Him each day? Or are we out there trying to wrestle those spiritual bulls on our own and do things our own way? Or are we at His feet waiting for Him? Wiersbe goes on and says, one evidence of your trust will be your willingness to be still and let Him have His way. The psalmist says, be still and know. Be still and know that I am God. We're going to close a little differently this morning. And we're going to close by hearing those words put to song. Here's what I'd like you to do. If you're like me and you have trouble being patient, you're going to have trouble right now. But I ask that you would just close your eyes and be still. Hear the words of this song. And ask God to help you put your trust in Him to know that He is faithful and that He will provide. Be Still and Know by Stephen Curtis Chapman.